VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Friends, we only have so much time here on Crosstalk, and so with so much information to get to you, we must get right to today's program. For Jim Schneider, I am Dalton Windsor. Last month, May the 11th to be exact, a group of over 17,000 physicians and medical scientists who were led by Dr. Robert Malone, a name that is probably pretty familiar to Crosstalk listeners, they issued a declaration affirming that the COVID state of medical emergency that we're currently under, that the state of emergency must be lifted, must see scientific integrity restored, and crimes against humanity addressed. The declaration consists of 10 principles, which again, we will begin sharing with you here in just a moment. If you have something to write with, you may want to jot down the name of these doctors, which, by the way, is a very impressive list of concerned professionals who are, for the most part, going it alone in providing what you and I are about to hear. Friends, buckle up.
Welcome to the May 11th, 2022 press conference of the Global COVID Summit, a symposium of over 17,000 physicians and scientists from around the world. Several representatives have gathered today to present their official declaration dedicated to ending the COVID pandemic.
Welcome to the Global COVID Summit. Who are we? We're a group of physicians and medical scientists from around the world that stand for truth and integrity in science. We are owned by no company. We are owned by no politician, no political party. We're here representing humanity and medical ethics. We started out as a small group just over a year ago and came together. First, a few of us, then a few hundred, then a few thousand, then over 10,000. We stand for principles of science and integrity and for humanity and for the ethics that must be restored. This is our fourth declaration to the world. We come together today as other political entities and parties have a plan going forward. We too have a plan going forward, and that's why we're here to share. We're here to declare that the integrity and medical ethic to which we have sworn oaths must be restored, and accountability must be had for those who have committed crimes against humanity. We've put this down in document, and I would like to share that with you here with my colleague, Dr. Finn. We, the physicians and medical scientists of the world, united through our loyalty to the Hippocratic Oath, recognize that the disastrous COVID-19 public health policies imposed on doctors and our patients are the culmination of a corrupt medical alliance of pharmaceutical, insurance, and healthcare institutions, along with the financial trusts which control them. They have infiltrated our medical system at every level and are protected and supported by a parallel alliance of big tech, media, academics, and government agencies who profited from this orchestrated catastrophe.
This corrupt alliance has compromised the integrity of our most prestigious medical societies to which we belong, generating an illusion of scientific consensus by substituting truth with propaganda. This alliance continues to advance unscientific claims by censoring data, intimidating and firing doctors and scientists for simply publishing actual clinical results or treating their patients with proven, safe, and life-saving medicines. These catastrophic decisions came at the expense of the innocent, who are forced to suffer health damage and death caused by intentionally withholding critical and time-sensitive treatments, or as a result of coerced genetic therapy injections, which are neither safe nor effective.
The medical community has denied patients the fundamental human right to provide true, informed consent for the experimental COVID-19 injections. Our patients are also blocked from obtaining the information necessary to understand risks and benefits of vaccines and alternatives due to widespread censorship and propaganda spread by governments, public health officials, and media. Patients continue to be subjected to forced lockdowns, which harm their health, careers, their children's education, and damage social and family bonds critical to civil society. This is not a coincidence. In the book entitled COVID-19, The Great Reset, leadership of this alliance has clearly stated their intention is to leverage COVID as an opportunity to reset our entire global society, culture, political structures, and economy, and build back better.
Klaus Schwab, founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, has famously stated, "The pandemic represents a rare but narrow window of opportunity to reflect, reimagine, and reset our world."
Our 17,000-plus global COVID summit physicians and medical scientists represent a much larger, enlightened global medical community who refuse to be compromised and are united and willing to risk the wrath of the corrupt medical alliance to defend the health of their patients.
The mission of Global COVID Summit is to end this orchestrated crisis, which has been illegitimately imposed on the world, and to formally declare that the actions of this corrupt alliance constitute nothing less than crimes against humanity.
We must restore the people's trust in medicine, which begins with free and open dialogue between physicians and medical scientists. We must restore medical rights and patient autonomy. This includes the foundational principle of the sacred doctor-patient relationship. The social need for this is decades overdue, and therefore, we, the physicians of the world, are compelled to take action.
After 2 years of scientific research, millions of patients treated, hundreds of clinical trials performed, and scientific data shared, we have demonstrated and documented our success in understanding and combating COVID-19. In considering the risks versus benefits of major policy decisions, our Global COVID Summit of 17,000-plus physicians and medical scientists from all over the world have reached a consensus on the following 10 foundational principles. To introduce the first principle, I'd like to introduce to you Dr. Robert Malone. He's a very well-respected physician. He's a 30-year vaccinologist and an RNA vaccine pioneer. He was a former Harvard Medical Fellow, a Salk Institute alum, and graduated from the Northwestern Medical School. I'm proud to present Dr. Robert Malone.
Thank you. We declare, and the data confirm, that the COVID-19 experimental genetic therapy injections must end. We believe, and we've observed, that these products do not prevent infection, replication, and transmission of Omicron. The vast majority of COVID infections are in those who've been vaccinated. The data now show that vaccination increases the risk of infection by Omicron. What has not been performed by the pharmaceutical industry is the required full battery of safety, toxicology, pharmacokinetic testing. Where does the RNA go and how long does it last in your body? The same is true with the adenoviral vectors. The distribution of the mRNA or the adenoviral vectors and the resulting spike protein toxicology has not been well characterized, and we do not understand even now what is happening in patients that have received these quasi-vaccines. We strongly recommend that these products now and in the future be regulated as the gene therapy products that they are, and require public involvement of the FDA's gene therapy scientists and committees in reviewing and approving these drugs. We believe that it's necessary to reestablish the 5-year minimum FDA testing period and to cease the emergency use authorization, and require full FDA licensure of all novel medical products used for COVID-19. We also strongly recommend that there be investigations of the actual causes of death and damage to millions who have been subjected to these mandatory mRNA and adenoviral vector gene therapy injections. And we also strongly recommend that the FDA acknowledge and investigate that the pseudouridine-containing synthetic mRNA-like genetic material persists in the body for 60 days or longer and produces spike protein at levels higher than is observed with the actual SARS-CoV-2 infection. This is well documented in a recent publication from January from the journal Cell, and this needs to be backed up by additional rigorous studies to characterize how long the genetic material remains in your body after you've been vaccinated or received the product, and how long and at what level the spike protein continues to persist. Furthermore, vaccine-associated adverse event assessments must be recalculated to reflect the actual time that the RNA stays in your body and continues to produce the spike protein, 60 days or longer. It is not adequate to only consider the short-term adverse events as related to the vaccine. We must acknowledge that the genetic COVID-19 genetic injections cause far more harm than good and provide zero benefit relative to risk for the young and healthy. They do not reduce COVID-19 infection, which is treatable and not terminal. Furthermore, the most recent data demonstrates that you are more likely to become infected or have disease or even death if you've been vaccinated compared to the unvaccinated people. This is shocking to hear, but it is what the data are showing us. The data now show that these experimental gene therapy treatments can damage your children as well as yourself. They can damage your heart, your brain, your reproductive tissue, and your lungs. This can include permanent damage and disablement of your immune system.
Wow. Strong words from Dr. Robert Malone, just stating how he believes and that the data confirms that the COVID-19 experimental genetic therapy injections must end, even saying that the vast majority of COVID infections are found in those who are vaccinated, and that the pharmaceutical industry has not performed the required full battery of safety testing on these injections. It is break time. We'll be right back as Dr. Malone will introduce the next speaker. The audio you are hearing today is from the Global COVID Summit held just last month at a press conference that many, very sadly, knew nothing about.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, some animals have been around for a long time, haven't they?
Indeed they have, Chris. Actually, from a biblical perspective, when God created the various kinds of animals in Genesis 1, he intended those kinds to survive and continue into the present. Some have gone extinct and some have adapted and changed somewhat, but the basic kinds are still the same. Evolutionists, on the other hand, are confused by what they call persistent fossils, where one organism in the fossil record dated at millions of years old is identical to the same organism alive today. This lack of change is not what evolution would predict. Examples of persistent fossils are numerous, including the horseshoe crab and the ant, etc., etc. Face it, Chris, evolution doesn't happen, but creation, now that did happen back in Genesis.
For more on creation, visit our website at icr.org.
This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Radio Network. Last month, May 11th, a group of over 17,000 physicians and medical scientists led by Dr. Robert Malone, who we just heard from, issued a declaration of 10 principles affirming that the COVID state of medical emergency must be lifted, that scientific integrity must be restored, and crimes against humanity must be addressed. The summit condemned, and I quote here, the disastrous COVID-19 public health policies that have resulted from a corrupt medical alliance of pharmaceutical, insurance, and healthcare institutions, along with the financial trusts which control them. The alliance has been protected and supported by a parallel alliance of big tech, media, academics, and government agencies who profited from this orchestrated catastrophe. Friends, these are their words, not ours. These are the words they have spoken, that they have declared, that they have now published. We just heard from Dr. Malone, shocking comments from him. He now introduces the next speaker who presents the second of 10 principles from the declaration. Now, coming up, we will tell you where you can actually watch this, or, of course, how you can just get a copy of today's broadcast. Stay with us for that. Here again is Dr. Robert Malone.
I'd like to introduce my good friend and close colleague, Dr. Richard Urso. Dr. Urso is not only a highly accomplished physician with multiple board certification. He was trained at the University of Texas, MD Anderson. He's the former chief of orbital oncology. He's a scientist, an inventor of an FDA-approved wound healing drug. Richard has personally successfully treated over 1,800 COVID patients, and he's going to lead the discussion with other physicians and medical scientists concerning early treatment protocols and options for reducing the death and damage caused by this disease.
We declare doctors should not be blocked from providing life-saving treatment. And globally, 6.2 million people have perished from COVID. Had early treatment not been blocked, millions would be alive today. I'm here today with Dr. Harvey Risch, a highly published Yale epidemiologist, and he was the first prominent academic physician to step out and evaluate early treatment data. Let me lay the groundwork. The NIH said early that there was no early treatment, and that was a lie. Let me explain that. The disease involves infection, inflammation, blood clots, and breathing problems. We have plenty of treatment on label, FDA-approved drugs for inflammation, for breathing problems, for blood clots. And we have biologically plausible mechanisms that have been experimentally proven that make sense to attack the virus. So we had plenty of options as we went forward. And yet the NIH still said there was no early treatment. And I give you the parallel of, it's like saying that you can cure hypertension, but if you can't cure it, don't even bother mitigating the damage. It makes no sense. So we're here today with Dr. Risch, and he was vigorously attacked for his analysis of the data in May of 2020 that hydroxychloroquine was working. Harvey, welcome, look forward to hearing your response.
Well, you know, the closer you are to target, the more likely you are to get attacked. And apparently I must have been right over the target, because that's what happened. However, those attacks were feeble. They conveyed no science, because the science was all on my side, because that's what I do. I'm a scientist, and I evaluate evidence, and I translate that evidence into English, and that's what I did. The evidence, not only was, at the time that I said, was for hydroxychloroquine in early outpatient treatment, but since that time, there have been another four or five studies. There's nine studies now, totaling more than 40,000 patients treated with hydroxychloroquine and other related drugs in regimens that doctors now use around the world, that cut the mortality by at least 75%, cut hospitalizations by half. And this is an established fact. There's no question about this. Whether FDA agrees with it or not, it doesn't matter. They can lie about the science. They can agree with the science. That doesn't change the science. So we know that hydroxychloroquine is a very effective drug. We now know that ivermectin, there's evidence for ivermectin, both in early treatment and in hospital treatment for its benefit, and both drugs for prevention of infection. And so we have these drugs that are inexpensive and readily available and can be used, except as the forces that are arrayed against us that represent financial interests of vaccines and other medications, patent medications, have limited us from, and limited doctors from being able to use these medications. But they do work very well. The science is completely clear that these things work and they're extremely safe. So we know they've been used for decades in tens of billions of doses and hundreds of millions of people, routinely used with exemplary safety histories, safer than aspirin, Tylenol, and other commonly used medications. So these were the drugs of choice and should have been used in the first place.
Oh, great. Well, I want to go on to talking about randomized controlled trials because they're a barrier to entry. And as we know, one of your quotes, they used the wrong dose, the wrong time, and the wrong patient. And other things that they did was actually fabricate data. And I think it's good that we highlight that the Harvard CV group concocted a study of 93,000 patients that was published in The Lancet. So this was obviously retracted later because of completely fabricated data. That data was used to basically banish hydroxychloroquine usage, and it was in response to the paper that you had wonderfully written in May 2020. And my question to you is, how did these shenanigans actually affect the early adoption of early treatment measures in the scientific and medical community?
Well, I think they frightened lay doctors, so to speak, rank-and-file doctors, away from doing this. But I think that the so-called this bogus evidence, this trumped-up evidence, was actually used to rally state medical boards and pharmacy boards to rule against the usage of these drugs, in spite of the fact that they're FDA-approved medications with exemplary safety records. And nevertheless, that there was a top-down suppression that occurred to prevent doctors from using it, in some places even prevent doctors from talking about using these drugs. And nevertheless, that none of that changes the efficacy of these drugs. It just made it harder for doctors to use. However, that we know from Dr. Ben Marble and his telemedicine group and other telemedicine groups, he reported at Senator Johnson's hearings earlier this year that 150,000 patients have been early treated with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and other drugs. And I think he said they had four deaths out of 150,000 patients. In total, it's more than 200,000 Americans who've been treated with these drugs, with a handful of deaths. These are remarkably safe and effective medications. And if we had any access to the real world of the what's called the legacy media, they would be reporting this, but they also have a financial interest in not doing so. And so doctors don't really get the true knowledge of the science of what these drugs do and how they can be used.
Yeah, final thought. You and I know the FDA, the CDC, the NIH, the WHO, they do not treat patients. And yet they're setting protocol and policy that is everyone considered, if they abandon those protocols, that they're in quote-unquote trouble. Is there a better way forward, and should that be happening?
Well, as we say, let doctors be doctors. That the end result, the bottom line, is if a doctor has a very high mortality and that's an outlier and most doctors don't, then the doctor's doing something wrong. That's what medical licensing boards should be looking at. And they should not be intervening in the doctor-patient relationship on legal approved drugs. They have no grounds to do that. It's a usurpation and abuse of their authority.
Thank you, Dr. Risch.
Pleasure.
Okay, also with us is Dr. Brian Tyson. Dr. Tyson is currently a leading congressional candidate in his district, and he's the doctor that has treated successfully over 7,000 patients. He's had many patients on diabetes, have diabetes, lots of comorbidities, and still he's had a wonderful success. And Dr. Tyson, please big picture your early treatment regimen and elaborate on the secrets of your success, if you don't mind.
Yeah, thank you, Richard. And, you know, for us, you know, early treatment was vital. We knew that this respiratory virus had an inflammatory component, and we knew it also had an antiplatelet blood clotting component. We saw the shortness of breath and the chest pain that the patients were presenting with. And so we used a multi-drug approach. We took hydroxychloroquine with Zithromax, zinc, and vitamin D, as well as vitamin C. And we used that early on to treat thousands of patients. We also added dexamethasone, albuterol, and inhaled budesonide for the inflammatory component when we saw chest x-ray changes. So that was one of the main drivers of our treatment, was being able to see the patients firsthand, as well as following them with chest x-rays and making sure that they got better over time.
So what you're saying is, you mean it's not about one drug? There's a multi-drug cocktail. Is that what you're saying?
It's always been a multi-drug cocktail. When you look at most viral illnesses, it's not a single drug. Even when you want to look at HIV, for example, it's never been a single-use drug. It's always been multi-drug therapy. Treat the symptoms, treat what you see, and then reassess to make sure that those treatments work.
So, okay, and we're saying that most of the drugs you used were on-label use and on for the actual things you were treating, the respiratory problems, the blood clots. Those are all on-label uses of FDA-approved drugs already.
That's correct. So you treat inflammation with anti-inflammatories. You treat pneumonia with antibiotics. You treat blood clots with anticoagulants. You treat hypoxemia with oxygen. And you can treat, pain with dexamethasone and Toradol. So it, again, all on-label uses, all FDA approved. And we use that for the first part of the alpha variant before we even had monoclonal antibodies or even vaccines available.
So would it be fair to say that the carnage that occurred, the 900,000 Americans that died, were due to the policies or due to the fact that we did not use early treatment effectively? Could we have saved many more lives?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, it looks like, first off, policy. Never have I seen a policy to say, let's hedge on the side of doing nothing compared to doing something with safe and effective drugs, right? You know, the all-cause mortality rate was high. We were seeing a 3.6 mortality rate in our area. So why hedge on the side of doing nothing where you know your mortality rate is going to be 3.6%? Why not side on the side of early treatment and see, can you improve that 3.6% mortality? Can you use safe and effective drugs? And then take that and expand that across the nation. And yeah, we should have been able to save 90 to 99% of those who had COVID-19. Our data is pretty clear. We're over 10,000 patients, 4 deaths. Nobody died if they started treatment before day 7. The 4 deaths we had were after day 7, and one of them died 6 weeks later in the hospital. So, I mean, I find it egregious to not even give frontline doctors like myself the benefit of the doubt and say, hey, let's try this. The worst case scenario is you're still going to have a 3.6 mortality rate.
So you're saying you had a 99%+ success rate?
That's correct. It was a 99.996%.
Thank you, Dr. Tyson.
Do you take time daily to study the Word of God? Do you go through the Bible systematically and read with comprehension? Do you desire to learn more than what you have in the past? VCY America is offering a package set of 4 books by Ron Rhodes from Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries. These Bible study books provide a systematic approach to help you gain better understanding of the Bible. Included in this set is 90 Days Through the New Testament in Chronological Order, providing overviews, powerful insights, and personal application. 40 Days Through Genesis, discover the story that started it all. 40 Days Through Daniel, revealing God's plan for the future. And 40 Days Through Revelation, uncovering the mystery of the end times. These 4 books are available as our way of saying thank you for your donation of $49 or more by calling VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. Don't let the lack of a Bible study plan keep you from daily devotions. Call 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Radio Network. In for Jim Schneider, I am Dalton Windsor. Last month, May 11th, a group of over 17,000 physicians and medical scientists who were led by Dr. Robert Malone issued a declaration of 10 principles affirming that the COVID state of medical emergency must be lifted, that scientific integrity need be restored, and crimes against humanity addressed. This summit that you probably haven't heard about, this summit condemned the disastrous COVID-19 public health policies that have resulted from a corrupt medical alliance of pharmaceutical, insurance, and healthcare institutions, along with the financial trusts which control them. And friends, that is the words of these doctors that have presented and that we are sharing with you today. Now, we are already halfway through our time together, but you can actually watch this summit in its entirety by logging on to rumble.com, and search Global COVID Summit Declaration 4. Search Global COVID Summit Declaration 4. Now, returning to the summit as Dr. Peter McCullough is being introduced.
Now I'd like to introduce Dr. Peter McCullough. He's a cardiologist. He's likely the most published cardiologist in America with over 600 papers. He is the most published scientist on COVID with 56 papers to date. He was a vice chief of internal medicine and a former professor at several universities. Here for you, Dr. Peter McCullough.
We declare the state of a national emergency which facilitates corruption and extends the pandemic should be immediately terminated. The state of emergency is over, and the state of emergency is predicated on the concern that the hospitals would be overrun with patients ill with COVID-19 or some other pandemic illness, and we would lose the capacity to care for patients with other conditions, and therefore mortality overall would skyrocket. That phase of the pandemic is over with. We hit our peak in terms of hospitalized patients in January of 2021. And since that time, we've progressively learned how to treat the illness, keep patients out of the hospital. And despite waves where there was record numbers of cases, including the Omicron variant, our hospital census remained low. And so we've now gone more than a year far away from anything that could be considered a national emergency. The national emergencies have been used by local, regional, state, and national authorities to have unchecked power. It's led them down a road of corruption, of malfeasance, and they've worked to continue the state of emergency through methods of propaganda, which is presentation of false information from individuals in positions of authority. And it's all based on the declaration of the emergency state. The several important things follow from the emergency state, including emergency authorization of medicinal products that can stop. And then most importantly, the emergency countermeasures. And emergency countermeasures include flows of funds to institutions, which unfortunately has corrupted the entire pandemic response. So to finish and conclude, the emergency phase of the pandemic is over. We declare the emergency has ended, and only doctors can declare that since we are in the front lines managing patients, and we have to manage the consequences of our decision when and if hospital census exceeds our capacity and our ability to care for it. I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce Dr. Kirk Milhone. Dr. Milhone is a board-certified pediatric cardiologist. He's also an ordained minister and has tremendous experience with COVID-19 and tremendous experience with relief efforts all over the world. So I'm going to turn the program next to Dr. Kirk Milhone.
Thank you, Dr. McCullough. We declare that medical privacy should never again be violated. All travel and social restrictions must cease. I come from a state in Hawaii that had severe restrictions. We were not allowed to go to the beach, even though we know the sun was very important for vitamin D, and vitamin D is very important for our immune health. I was amazed that the people at restaurants could ask for my personal data. They could find out by what kind of, if I wore a mask or not, whether I had been vaccinated or not. All personal data must be expunged from non-HIPAA compliant databases. It's interesting to me that I grew up in a time where all of the medical information, if I ever talked about anyone else's information, that I would potentially be sanctioned by my hospital. But now everyone seems that it's their right to know what my personal medical information is. And this needs to stop. We need to return privacy to the patients and to the citizens. As I can say, as I travel all around the world, this idea of a medical passport, a technology that must be removed from government databases, and legislation be adopted by all nations to protect all citizens from future restrictions of personal freedoms. My personal freedoms have been affected in a way that I could not travel to places where I go to give international heart care to children. There are countries I was not allowed to enter into. There are still countries that I'm not allowed to enter into, and there are children who have very low risk at all, if any at all, from getting COVID that are being denied medical therapies because of these draconian measures. This needs to stop. At this time, it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Lynn Finn. She is a specialist in infectious and tropical diseases. She is a patent holder and is actively involved in the development of novel therapies. Dr. Lynn.
Thank you so much, Kurt. We declare that masks are not and never have been effective protection against an airborne respiratory virus in the community setting. Global COVID Summit scientists, in partnership with industrial hygiene experts, have held this position from the outset and continue to oppose the government and CDC stance on this unscientific policy. You must understand that when handling pathogens that are supposedly quite detrimental to a society, we usually are enclosed in a self-contained suit with an air supply. And the fact that these masks are not even considered personal protection in any way, in any shape or any form, and they've been mandated in the community setting without a single randomized controlled trial supporting its use in this manner, is unacceptable. The CDC nor OSHA recognizes these facial coverings as PPE. Even the new ASTM mask standard, which is ASTM F3502-21, which is standard specification for barrier face coverings, state that masks are not PPE and are not protective. Therefore, facial coverings are not part of the industrial hygiene's hierarchy of control, which is a stalwart in the area. The primary mechanism of transmission was declared by the CDC on May 7th to be through airborne aerosol particles. It's not as previously thought, through droplets. I'm sure you've had many an argument regarding a person's respiratory droplets carrying it. And that is not the case. It is airborne particles that facilitate transmission. And a 0.09 micron virion is not going to be mitigated by a mask, a cloth mask, a surgical mask, and an unfitted N95 and beyond. The evidence is clear. Masks of all types are ineffective and potentially harmful. There's never been an instance during this pandemic where face coverings were appropriate. We still are waiting for that evidence. You don't use them in the community to mitigate infection or viral spread. The potential harm includes lowering your blood oxygen level, raising CO2, hyperventilating, potentially encouraging cross-contamination or self-contamination. How many times have you seen people touch them and touch other things? Masking diminishes social interactions, causes alienation, encourages conformity, It's even turned sensible people into informants for the authorities, telling on their neighbors, telling on their friends. The distancing, the social distancing for healthy individuals intentionally prolongs this pandemic, causing emotional damage and conditions people to be agreeable to such isolation. Masking hides facial cues. For children, for infants, they need those cues to develop. For social, emotional, and speech development, it's important for them to see you, to interact with you. It's evident that it's already caused such irreparable harm since the CDC has revised, for the first time, child development milestones under 5 years of age due to delays. Masking causes and aggravates cardiovascular respiratory illnesses. Masking patients in a hospital when they're short of breath just doesn't make sense. A recent peer-reviewed paper by Spira used data from 35 European countries reviewing mortality data from the most critical time, 2020 to 2021, during the pandemic. And this data showed that the measure was unable to reduce COVID-19 transmission. Moreover, the positive correlation between the mask usage in the community and the deaths in Western Europe also suggests that universal mask usage may have actually been harmful and have unintended consequences. At this time, I'd like to introduce to you Dr. David Weissman. He's an alum from the University of Manchester. He's a former Johnson & Johnson research fellow. He's a pharmacologist and experimental pathology specialist. Dr. David Weissman.
Thank you, Dr. Finn. We declare that funding and research must be established for vaccination damage, death, and suffering. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the nice introduction from Dr. Finn. And secondly, I'd like to acknowledge the many collaborators that I've been privileged to work with around the world on the issue of vaccine safety. We've been analyzing various data sets and following FDA and CDC meetings to really try and understand what is actually going on in the world of COVID vaccine safety. And we have to give this a name. So we've given it a name, post-COVID vaccine syndrome, which must be recognized. Vaccine injuries and ICD-10 codes must be recognized so that patients can begin to receive treatment. Without that, they are just left in complete limbo. Vaccine-associated injuries pose public health and economic problems far greater than those due to COVID. And I'm particularly talking about the unknown long-term effects that we are beginning to see with the COVID vaccines. These over many years could cause economic problems far greater than what we've seen until now. There must be 5 to 15 year follow-up for vaccine effects as described in FDA's own guidance document for gene therapy products.
So in these past 13 minutes, four more of 10 total principles from frontline doctors last month at the Global COVID Summit. You can watch this in its entirety online at rumble.com. Rumble.com, search Global COVID Summit Declaration 4. Final segment when we continue.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Well, remember when anyone that brought up the topic of election fraud and voting machines was called a conspiracy theorist, or the media that said, oh, those have been debunked? Well, interesting enough, the Associated Press last week had an article, and here's what it read, quote, "Electronic voting machines from a leading vendor used in at least 16 states have software vulnerabilities that leave them susceptible to hacking if unaddressed," the nation's leading cybersecurity agency says in an advisory sent to the state election officials, end quote. And what is the company? Dominion. It says the Dominion voting system. And who put this out? The government, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency, the one that originally said the 2020 election was the safest in American history. Wow, how they have finally turned the tables and admitting what really happened. What will happen from here? Stay tuned. I'm Brandon House.
Back on Crosstalk for our final segment, time not allowing us to get to all of this from last month's Global COVID Summit. Just heard from Dr. Wiseman and his declaration calling for funding and research to be established for COVID vaccination damage, death, and suffering. Now the next declaration, number 7 of 10, from Dr. Bowden.
We declare no opportunity should be denied in our society, including educational, military service, medical careers, especially including medical treatment, over the unwillingness to take an injection. I've had the pleasure of connecting with thousands of patients during this pandemic. I've talked to hundreds of patients who have been fired, kicked out of the military, rejected by family and friends, treated differently at school, denied medical treatment because of their reluctance to take the COVID shot. I know many physicians who want to help these patients with exemptions, but won't because they're scared of losing their license. I have personally been subjected to discrimination against my views, and I was suspended from a major hospital system in Houston because I spoke out against vaccine mandates. In light of what we know now, employees who have been wrongfully terminated should be offered immediate reemployment and damages. Vaccination status has become a new form of discrimination, and it needs to stop. And I want to thank all the patients that I've connected with who have helped me through this journey, and we are here to fight for you. Now I'd like to introduce Dr. Fadi Hanna Shmouni. He's a physician scientist in neuroendocrinology and genetics who completed his training at Yale. He studied endocrinology at NIH and clinical biochemical genetics at the University of Toronto. He's board certified by the American Board of Internal Medicine and Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada, and an active staff physician at Vancouver General Hospital, and a fellow with the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada.
Thank you, Mary, for the kind introduction. We declare the end of the First Amendment violations, medical censorship. As a practicing physician from Canada, I would like to bring attention to the medical censorship that occurred to my colleagues that wanted to speak the truth about various medical information and research pertaining to the pandemic. It's unfortunate that some of them lost their medical licenses and were removed from various social media platforms.
Allow us to interrupt just briefly. In order that we could at least broadcast the entire 10 principles, we will use these closing minutes to simply hear from the remaining doctors these final principles in the declaration. Dr. Yeadon.
Dear colleagues and supporters, we declare that Pfizer, Moderna, BioNTech, Janssen, and AstraZeneca, and their enablers, willfully withheld and omitted crucial safety and effectiveness information from patients and physicians and should be immediately indicted for fraud. We know that shortly after administration of these products, thousands of people have died. And although correlation isn't causation, reasonable criterion have been applied to examine the relationship between injections and the events, and is absolutely clear-cut that these are the cause of death. Mechanistically, the design of these products was knowingly deficient in a number of ways. First, they caused the expression in the human body of toxic virus spike protein. Unlike what they told us, that it would stay in the injection site, they distribute widely around the body. There is no built-in limit to the amount of toxic spike protein that can be made or for how long it is made, and that's the cause of the toxicity. Turning to the clinical trials, there is evidence of questionable practices all around. For example, several of the studies were clearly unblinded while they were ongoing, contrary to best practice. And also, in a number of cases, subjects were removed from the database prior to statistical analysis in a way that is suggestive of fraud. Next up, Dr. Ryan Cole. He's a Mayo Clinic trained and board certified pathologist and also CEO of a medical lab.
Thank you, Dr. Eden, for that kind introduction. We declare government and medical agencies must be held accountable. Emergency use of damaging, now proven dangerous lipid nanoparticle gene modified shots must be stopped. We know these lipid nanoparticles go everywhere. Government and pharmaceutical corruption has pushed these on us like never before, and we've never used these modes of experiment on humanity before. These go to the brain, they go to the spleen, they go to the bone marrow, they go to the liver, they go to the reproductive organs. Each of these agencies and these companies should be independently scrutinized and held accountable for the damage that they have caused to humanity. Many governors around these United States, including Governor Cuomo and others, had willingly sent thousands of seniors unnecessarily to their deaths and unnecessarily elevated the death counts. This was a fake emergency. Draconian measures and unjustified non-scientific lockdowns caused billions to suffer, especially the innocent children of this world. There is no current medical emergency. Failed agency heads and corrupt public health officials, including, but not limited to, Fauci, Walensky, Becerra, and countless others, must be removed from office and held accountable for mismanagement of this pandemic. Hospital administrators need to be held accountable for blocking common sense, proven, life-saving treatments and allowing the continued use of failed, harmful drugs, such as remdesivir. Illegal, unconstitutional, First Amendment violating Homeland Security, quote, disinformation agencies must immediately be defunded and disbanded. We must immediately break up the too-big-to-fail federal regulatory-captured health agencies, all pharmaceutical funding of FDA, NIH, and CDC foundations must end, and independent oversight must be instituted. We as a human race promise to never again experiment on humanity after grave crimes committed in a war distant past. The Nuremberg Code should be codified into U.S. federal law and all nations' law. EUA exceptions to common rule should be rescinded.
The Global COVID Summit can be seen in its entirety at rumble.com. Search Global COVID Summit Declaration 4.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.